This is Scripture Read Badly,
a podcast where two grown-up pastors' kids discuss the stories of the Bible in chronological order,
attempting to avoid heresy and generally having a good time.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Ryan.
Sit back and rejoice.
Today's verse comes from Leviticus chapter 17, verse 12. Therefore I have said to the people of Israel, no person among you shall eat blood, neither shall any stranger who sojourns among you eat blood. Here we have God outlawing vampires and hospitality to vampires. My name is Ryan. Welcome to Scripture Read Badly.
Who does he think he is? I'm Jeremy. And I'm also speaking on this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And today we'll go into chapter 17 and possibly 18 and 19, depending on how we go, which is a continuation from the Day of Atonement, which explores a lot of blood and what blood does and how it purifies, sort of, but also makes things sticky and gross, so then they'd have to clean themselves a lot.
Yep.
It definitely goes through a lot of atonement,
mm-hmm.
and replacing sin and purity with etc's.
Yeah. So this is on the back of the previous episode we did on the Day of Atonement and exactly what atonement means, when it's substitution of one thing to somebody else, and so forth. So chapter 17, according to the Bible Project, who are a fantastic couple of guys who
Very fantastic.
They make amazing videos. You should check out the Bible Project on YouTube and stuff. They made an overview of Leviticus, which I recommended at the beginning of this season for all of our listeners to watch. And they pointed out that the structure of Leviticus is kind of like a sandwich, in that it starts with passages about sacrifices, and then it goes to passages about the priesthood, then it goes to passages about purity and cleanliness and stuff, and then it has chapters 16 and 17, which focus on atonement, and then it goes back to purity, priesthood, and sacrifices. So they did a really good job of explaining it. So I'm just going to point you all over there so I don't have to explain it, because also they're better than me at explaining it. So
they are better than me.
So chapters 16 and 17 of Leviticus are right in the middle, and they are basically the apex of this entire book. And we did talk about it at length last episode with atonement. So then chapter 17 begins with God following up on the Day of Atonement, and all that type of thing, with saying some extra things about the place of sacrifice and who's allowed in there, who's not, and that type of thing, because that was obviously something that Israel had encountered already up to that point, people doing unlawful things inside of the place of sacrifice. And then, interestingly, and unless you want to stay out there for a little bit longer, I want to
In 17?
Yeah, I want to I want to talk about eating blood. And
Before that,
yep.
It seems like he's saying do all of these things with blood, and then the response to that is, but don't do it just for the sake of spilling blood. Like, blood is important,
mm-hmm.
and if you do it outside of the context of all of these things, then that's a bad thing, like that's an error.
Hmm.
And so it's quite interesting that it's not like, I love blood, just put blood wherever because I love it.
Yeah.
It's more blood is this important symbol, and I want you to do it in these certain contexts because then it'll be powerful.
Yeah, so God says that life is in the blood, essentially.
Yep.
Which is where we get the term lifeblood. And so I think what God is saying with all this is he's saying that with atonement, it's life for a life. When you sacrifice, it's a life for in place of your own life. all your own sin and guilt and things, which ultimately leads to death and so forth. So when he's saying, yep, don't eat the blood, he's saying the blood is what is significant in this metaphor. So I want you to make sure that you don't taint the sacrifice.
Yep.
I want you to focus on the fact that you're giving the life of this animal. You're not providing me with death. You're providing me with its life. And so then, yep, I think that's supposed to be the mindset with which the Israelites approached sacrifices. It wasn't that you were killing something. It was that you were giving the life of something to God.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
Which is important when he says that you have to touch, like, I'm not sure if it's in Leviticus or Deuteronomy, but you have to put your hands on the beast that is about to be sacrificed.
Mm-hmm.
And so you feel its life, like, this is actually something that I'm giving.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think they have to actually watch the ceremony. So it would be probably very, I don't want to say the word traumatizing, but like eye-opening, like, whoa, this is actually a life.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes into the second part of the chapter, if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of what I was already talking about. I mean, the first half, yep, of the chapter, it talks about not sacrificing to goat demons and things, and that's fun. That's in verse 7, that if you want to look that fun up. I don't really understand goat demons, but they don't sound like very friendly
You don't really want things. Them over your house to have tea.
No. No, I wouldn't think so. And I don't think we should look at them as fawns from Narnia or mythology.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, I don't think it's you're a Mr. Tumnus situation. No. No. Well, unless it's like an evil fawn. You know, Mr. Tumnus, but with a black trench coat and sunglasses.
Well, yeah, smoking a pipe.
Mm. Because or vaping. Smoking is a sin. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, vaping is.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Vaping's a sin. Smoking's fine. Yeah.
It's different.
I think that's it. Yeah, so with what's interesting about God commanding them not to touch the blood of the animals as well, especially the ones in sacrifices, is God then says, if anybody... okay, so God instructs... Sorry, beyond sacrifices, God, yep, then talks about the actual blood within animals, yep, and how we should not touch them, and so forth. So even in from verse 13 to the end of the chapter, he's talking about how if anybody touches a creature's blood, whether it was something that he killed... Oh, no, sorry. Something that he kills is the exception, I think, here. But something that dies by itself, or something that is torn apart by beasts, if anybody touches it, they are to wash themselves and wash their clothes, and they will be unclean until the evening. And this is God, once again, like we talked about with the bodily fluids section of Leviticus, which is everybody's favorite chapter. God,
it's definitely my favorite.
It's God giving some purification routines to these people so that, yep, they do not contract diseases. And we know from examples throughout history, and hopefully not from first-hand experience, but contact with dead things often leads to disease. And we saw that, yep, with the bubonic plague in the Middle Ages. Yep. That went rampant because rats would eat dead animals and they would get this disease from these dead creatures, and then the rats would either die themselves in the proximity of people, or they would bite people, and then this whole death, essentially, which is in, it's just disease is slow acting death. This death would make its way into people's lives, and that would ultimately lead to them dying, and then more people would die because of the spreading of this disease. So God is here saying, yes, I want you to sacrifice, but things that die by themselves are far more likely to have diseases. I don't want, yep, you or anybody else in the nation of Israel to get these diseases because you're important to me, So he's preserving the life of the Israelites by giving them these laws about not touching the blood of dead animals.
Yeah. And you wonder what they thought before now. Like in Egypt, do they eat blood? Or do the surrounding civilizations eat blood? And they were just like, oh yeah, that's good, let's do that. Or is it because they didn't have much food and they were craving the taste of meat, so they're like, oh, quick, let's just eat the blood.
Well, I think that one, because he even says, yeah, so he says, you can't eat the blood of any creature, whether it's died by itself or torn by beasts. So, yes, I think it's the latter of what you said. I think that they would possibly be craving the meat of these animals that they see die, even though God has said, you will eat what I provide, not necessarily what the people find. You don't eat roadkill, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And so then they
What if it's tasty? What if you put some like cayenne pepper on?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Maybe
that's further into the book.
Maybe they just didn't have cayenne pepper, and that was the reason that God gave them that instruction.
There you go, boom.
It wouldn't have been tasty.
Cooking
enough.
With Jeremy.
Yep.
If you put some cayenne pepper on, it's holy.
Cooking read badly. Anything else to say about chapter 17 before we move on?
No, but it seemed to have been a part of their culture for like thousands or hundreds of years.
Yeah.
Because that's what kosher food is, right?
Hmm.
Like they drain the blood a specific way.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a pretty good principle that they kept to.
Yeah.
Good job, everyone.
Yeah, way to be.
Not eating the blood. Way to be.
Way to be. All right, so chapter 18...
Vampire racists.
Chapter 18 is all about unlawful sexual relations. And this is in the same section as these instructions with the... not eating the blood, because likewise it is a purification practice, or at least a lifestyle that God wanted the people to adhere to so that they preserved their own lives, whether that is physically, whether that is genetically, or whether it was spiritually. So let's talk about chapter 18.
And you would say this is very much about sanitation and life preservation, right?
Well, that's, yeah, I think given the section of Leviticus that this is in, I would say that it is.
I agree.
Okay.
Now, and this could also link in with what I was saying before, like the surrounding nations and Egypt have different sexual worship rituals.
Yeah.
That fly in the face of most of this and may end up with death at its doorstep.
Sure.
But I think it's also to do with the context that they're living in at present isn't like super sanitary as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like they have showers and etc. anywhere close. But it's also because he's creating them and leading them into being a great nation that'll hopefully survive for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's looking at how to create strong families and how to create strong communities and how to create or at least protect them from jealousy and conflict that doesn't need to be there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So
In my Bible, in the ESV Bible, it refers to having sex as to uncovered nakedness. What does your translation say?
It does say that somewhere. Yeah. Yeah, it says that. And also referring back to Abraham or Moses? Moses. No.
Noah.
And Noah was uncovered, and that was supposed to be a euphemism for doing it.
Right, yeah. So, okay, yeah, with that perspective, looking at the account of Moses and his nakedness that happened at the end of the flood. And so then that was, I think, in the... Okay, at the end of chapter 4 of Genesis. So bear with me, guys. We're not jumping all the way back in the Bible, but it does... That's Cain and Abel. My bad. I meant the end of chapter 5, 7. The end of chapter 9. Man, I suck at this. Okay.
11 is Babel.
It's 9. It's chapter 9. Yeah. So it says, Noah began to be a man of the soil, and he planted a vineyard. He drank of the wine and became drunk and lay uncovered in his tent. And now it says, Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father and told his two brothers, Shem and Japheth, took a garment, laid it on both their shoulders, walked backwards and covered the nakedness of their father. So, I'm not sure if that is what exactly that means. Because it doesn't mention Noah's. It definitely wouldn't mention Zipporah, Moses' wife. No. It doesn't mention Noah's wife in that part. So I wonder if he was masturbating, maybe?
That is possibly.
That's something that I've never really considered before.
Me neither.
Don't necessarily want to think about it too much, but that is...
Nope, we're reading scripture badly.
Yeah, it is reassuring to know that it doesn't say that Ham, or whoever it was, he just didn't cover his father's nakedness. It wasn't that he uncovered his father's nakedness.
True.
That's a little bit up in the air still. If you have any insight into that, you can let us know or not, either way. Don't mind. So getting back to Leviticus 18, we are looking at all these different encounters that God forbids. He says, don't approach any of your close relatives to uncover nakedness.
And I wonder what close relatives stands for back then.
Yeah. Yeah, because obviously... Prior to this point, we have had plenty of incest within the Hebrew people. However, I think this was the first time that God specifically stated, don't do it. So maybe the gene pool at this stage was diverse enough within the people of Israel where there wasn't genetic deformities that would occur or genetic deterioration, as modern science has uncovered, that often happens when children are made with two close relatives, whether they are siblings or whatever, children.
Yep.
Even cousins, there is genetic deterioration.
Yep.
This, I think, is the first time that God has said, don't do it. So he's probably said, at this point, there is enough diversity that it's safe. You can have sex with anyone outside of your family. Within the covenant of marriage, as he made clear earlier and kind of makes clear here, but maybe he doesn't really ever make it clear. I'm probably wrong about that, but either way...
What is he not making clear?
That sex needs to happen within a marriage covenant.
He hasn't made it clear up until this point?
Well, Genesis says that a husband will leave his... parents and cleave to his wife.
Yeah.
All the other accounts up to this point have said that Noah had a wife, whoever Cain had a wife, whoever she was, Moses had a wife, all these people that have wives and then have kids, or at least have wives and have sex. It's implied with marriage that they know each other. It always says he knew his wife, blah, blah, blah. So, up until this point, I'm not exactly sure if God has ever specifically, I was going to say explicitly, but we want to stay clear of the explicit when we're talking about sex, specifically said that you can only have sex with your wife or you can only have sex with your husband.
It has been inferred, though.
Yes, exactly. It's been inferred, but never specifically stated, I don't think.
True.
But I could be wrong. That said,
so is this chapter gonna explicitly state it?
I get the feeling this chapter will rule out all other people.
Oh, okay.
To the point where it is further implied. This time, I think a little bit more strongly, because he's saying no close relatives. He's saying not your mother, not your father's wife, which is interesting, because you would think that you're... I mean, it could be your stepmother, or it could be father's second wife.
Second wife, or third wife.
Or 300th wife, or whatever. Don't uncover the nakedness of your sister, your father's daughter, or your mother's daughter. Yeah, so it seems as though families are a little bit more blended at this stage. Yep. A lot more diverse. But he's basically just saying nobody that you are related to by blood, and nobody that people that you're related to by blood are related to by blood.
Yeah.
Because we know how much, we know how important blood is to God. We already talked about that this episode. Okay, do you have anything to say about any of these specific encounters that God prohibits?
I wonder too if it's not just sanitation, but like relational unity.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to refer to something that's maybe odd and not very relevant, but at the same time, when we were living in Newcastle, at the start of every quarter, there would be this speech like, hey, students that are going to be here for 3 months, the next 3 months, you're going to get quite intimate with this group of people. So we just ask that you don't date for that 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was that emotions are being thrown around, and all of these new things are coming up in your life that you don't necessarily need to be thinking about romance at the time. And in the past, there have been romances that have ruined the whole community for everyone else because of the distrust and the whatever. And I wonder if it's the same here, like God's saying, in your intimate communities, make sure that there's no room for conflict or jealousy or even infidelities.
Yep.
Because that will ruin the community, even if this direct person you're relating to currently isn't related to you by blood. Mm-hmm. It is quite an intimate community. But then I wonder too, because they're all in tribes, was there a rule for them that they could only hook up with or mate with those in their tribe, or was there intertribal relationships, or was that like Romeo and Juliet kind of stuff?
I think it was intertribal. I don't think that it was specific. Okay. However, I also think that having a pure bloodline within tribes was important to them as well.
Yeah.
But I feel like that was more... how we say... so, people later on... David was from the tribe of Judah.
Mm-hmm.
And he married Saul's daughter, who was from the tribe of Benjamin. And other people who were from different tribes as well. That may have been a different kind of case because he was the king, but I don't think it was ever prohibited to intermarry. But if you think about it like this, you're living in you're living in Vilnius, and I'm sure within Vilnius there's different communities that have interaction with each other, even considering a church, and maybe imagine that church has a school attached to it and a university. Yep. So if you really wanted, or your parents wanted for you, you could be brought up entirely within that community so that you are branded as a whatever.
A Vilniece.
Yeah. Yeah. You would be specifically a person that grew up in this particular way of thinking in this community. You have these relationships with these people that are all within the community. And we see this in different... When people go to a different country, and it's... I'm sure it's similar with you. You have been doing a lot to have a lot of Lithuanian friends as well. But there is a temptation when you go to a new country to bunch up with people that you find that you share nationality or at least a language and culture with. So there is, I feel, a greater tendency for humanity to bring up families within like-minded communities. So within the nation of Israel, God said, you people will live in this part of the country. You people will live in this part of the country. You people will live in that part of the country. And so they can have interrelations. They can move from one tribe over to the land of another tribe. But it's just a matter of, I think, convenience and the fact that there are so many people from the tribe of Benjamin around me and I'm a Benjamite. It makes sense that my wife will be a Benjamite. It's like going to a Christian university in America, which I haven't done, but I understand there's a tendency that if you go there, you'll find somebody that you'll get married to there. And even within YWAM, there's the expectation that you go to YWAM, and if you're in YWAM for a significant amount of time, you will meet somebody also in YWAM, and that'll kind of be the foundation for your relationship, I guess. So I think it's similar within the tribes of Israel, where it was never prohibited, but it was kind of expected that people wouldn't really go out of their way to look into another tribe. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes heaps of sense.
Cool.
I definitely think, and I understand the whole echo chamber that is comfortable to stay in, and I feel like they would have been very proud of their tribes.
Sure.
As later they become like their own mini kingdoms, and... they would have had their own probably laws and leaders that they respected. But I definitely understand the whole avoidance of conflict in the micro family. And so I like these principles, I suppose you'd call it. And I think it could also be more of the training of you're not slaves anymore. You can create culture. You can create your own tribes. And this is part of the way you create good tribes is strong families and strong communities that surround those families.
Yep.
And then bringing kids up in that same thing. And then it's interesting that it goes through all of these more people, like don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. And then it gets to 21, you shall not give any of your offspring to sacrifice them to Molech. And so proclaim the name of your Lord. And that's one of those... what I understand is one of the gods at the time was this guy that you would just give your baby to and the baby would die and it would be burnt. It was either with the hope that this guy would bless your crops or bless your family or bless your...
some kind of blessing.
Baby making, which is just weird that you'd give your baby for that. And it's one of the ones that comes up over and over again and God keeps... Mm-hmm. telling them, like, no, I'm serious, don't do this, and they kept doing it.
Yeah.
And I feel like that would ruin communal unity and intimacy too, if you just keep giving babies to a fire.
Yeah.
And not really seeing the proof of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes into 24, which is, do not defile yourself in any of these ways, for all, by all these practices, the nations I am casting out before you have defiled themselves. So it's continuing the process of, like, you are holy and you are set apart from these other nations, and don't do what these other nations are doing because it's stupid and that's why they're getting destroyed.
Yeah. Yeah, and I like the imagery that is used when it says the land became unclean, so that I punished its iniquity, and the land vomited out its inhabitants. And so then God is saying, you should keep to what I'm saying, otherwise the land will vomit you out.
Yep.
And nobody wants to be vomited out of anything, ever.
No, that'd be
not gross. Even Jonah wanted to be vomited out of the whale, or the fish. Was Jonah real? I don't know. We'll get to that
in a
year or so. So, vomit. Yep. Then we move on to chapter 19. And
before we get there, 26:27, he refers to everyone keeping these ordinances, either the citizen or the alien who resides among you. And so the theme of alien keeps coming up too, that they were either the people that joined them because they were so attracted to what they had, or the people that they took over as they took the land back.
But the moral of the story is that you can be racist against vampires, but you have to be inclusive of aliens.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Invite the alien, get rid of the vampire.
Yep. Gotcha. Yes.
And then on to 19.
Yeah. So, chapter 19, God is once again reiterating the fact that he is holy. And he also says the words that he will later be quoted as saying numerous times, where he says, "You shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy."
Boom. Good quote.
And it's interesting because he said something similar to Abraham, and he said something similar, I think, to Moses earlier on as well. To Abraham, he said, "Walk before me and be blameless." Here, he follows up this statement, which is on the back of him saying, the reasons I'm giving you these commandments are because by these things, the people around you in this new land have made themselves unclean. He follows that up by saying, so be holy because I am holy. And so he's further drawing a distinction, not only saying don't be like them, but he's saying be like me, which is pretty awesome, because often as humans, it's very easy to give rules to people that you yourself don't have to follow. And it isn't necessarily that you have double standards, but maybe you have different responsibilities. So even say you were in charge at a camp for youth group age kids, something like that, and you're going through and giving them all their cleaning jobs, but as you were giving them their cleaning jobs, you didn't say things like, mop the floors however you know how. If you don't know how, ask somebody and they can show you. When you're putting toilet paper on the toilet paper rack, do it however you feel comfortable, whatever's natural. Instead, it's more like giving them the instruction, but then giving them your preferences and enforcing that as the instruction. So saying something like, when you clean the bathroom, you have to put the toilet paper facing outwards or facing inwards, whichever way is your preference, and saying that is the correct way to do it. Or saying, when you mop the floors, you have to do it this particular way, but it's something that isn't your responsibility. You don't have to do that. So there's no point whatsoever in giving them that instruction. It's not something that you have to follow. But here God is saying, I don't want you to do it this way. Instead, I want you to be holy. I want you to do it the way that I will show you. Which I think is really cool. It's not just leaving us in limbo a little bit. It's not detaching us from the bad things and letting us hang there. But he's taking us from the bad things and actually putting us in his camp, in the good side. So I like that.
Heaps good.
And he follows it up with talking about revering your father and mother, which is the fifth commandment that he gave on Mount Sinai. And he says again, and you shall keep the Sabbath. I am the Lord your God, which was the seventh commandment, sixth commandment, something like that.
Probably the eighth.
Yeah, it was one of the commandments, I think.
Do not turn to idols or make cast images for yourselves, which is another one of the commandments.
Yep. So he's just reiterating himself. Yeah, that's right. But I think maybe the reason he's doing this is because he's given his little reason as to why to not do things the other way. But then he said, I'm Lord your God, you will be holy as I am holy. And then he's giving them the important commandments right afterwards and saying,
yep,
do this, do this, do this. This is how you will be holy. This is how you'll be different. And we see that God gives some extra sacrifice laws or instructions, at least. And then comes one of the most famous passages in the Torah when God...
Is it verse 11?
It is verse 11. So God is giving some instructions about the harvest and making sure that you are being good stewards. And then he says... you know, so it's not verse 11, but he's he's there reiterating some of the other commandments where he's saying, don't steal, don't deal falsely, don't lie, don't swear by my name falsely.
You can kill, but you can't murder.
You can kill, but you can't murder. Yeah, but then he finally gets down to verse 18, where he says, you shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against the sons of your own people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself.
Boom.
I am the Lord. That is... Jesus said that it was the second most important commandment, was to love your neighbor as yourself. Let's talk about that for a few minutes before we bring this thing to a close. What is your understanding of what it means to love your neighbor as yourself?
It definitely doesn't necessarily mean buy ice cream for everyone because you want ice cream so that you can eat ice cream.
Yeah, it's a little bit counterintuitive. I think it's bigger
than that. And mm-hmm. we've just been going through 1 Peter, and 1 Peter has in it this idea that, like, Jesus sacrificed himself and went through suffering because he wanted to bring life to everyone, and yep. you need to do that as well. Like, you need to sacrifice your life so that other people can live and love and enjoy, or mm-hmm. at least be saved. And so I feel like that's the ultimate love, is to lay down your life for a brother.
Mm-hmm.
And so that looks different in smaller things, like saying nice things to people, or serving other people, or going out of your way to make other people's lives better. But ultimately, it's the idea of putting others before yourself in such a way that they get to live better lives. Would you agree, or disagree, or add?
Yeah. Yeah, that's... So I think this is a little bit multifaceted, in the sense that if you... break it down word by word, to we can talk about what love means, and as you said, love is laying down your life for another, and it is putting other people before yourself. Essentially, that is what this commandment is. I have heard it preached, or maybe not preached, at least said to me, that this is also promoting loving yourself as a healthy practice, because it's hard to love mm-hmm. other people well when you don't even love yourself well. Yep. And obviously, loving yourself well doesn't mean that you are selfish. It means that you are selfless. So you... it's a weird kind of tension and balance that you have to do this type of thing in. But loving your neighbor as yourself... Obviously, I want to take care of my body. I'm not going to eat a lot of junk because I know that's bad for me. So,
but it tastes so good in my mouth.
It does taste so good. Maybe that's a bad example, but something like staying clean, for example. If I have the capability to offer somebody... to use my shower if they're over at my house and they stink because they have just come there from something and they really need a shower, I can approach that in one of two ways. I can either think, if I was smelly and I knew that I stank and I knew I needed a shower, if somebody offered one to me, I would feel so grateful and I would definitely take it, and I know that it's healthy for my body and for my relationships to do that. So you could approach them out of humility and say, would you mind? No, not would you mind. But if you would like hospitality, you can go have a shower.
Yep.
On the other hand, you can not love them as yourself. Or maybe if you don't love yourself very well, you could say, hey, you stink. You should be better than this. Go take a shower because no one wants to talk to you. If your relationship is like that with yourself and you see that exhibited by your interactions with other people, then I think that's definitely something that you need to address in your own heart. Because I think it goes beyond being kind to other people, being kind so that you will receive kindness in return. I think it goes beyond that to treating others how you would want to be treated for their sake.
Yep.
I think so. I feel like I wasn't very clear there, but do you have anything to say in response?
I think you were clear there, especially that last sentence that I've just momentarily forgotten.
Well, let me say it like this. I recently heard it from Pastor Zach Bartles on one of his sermon podcasts. He was talking about how Buddha, the Buddha or the Buddha, depending where you're from, was this dude that grew up really sheltered and then eventually saw suffering and went, this is crazy. So then he kind of allowed himself to endure a lot of suffering to try and achieve some kind of enlightenment and peace. And one of his statements, one of his famous sayings was, do not do to others what you don't want them to do to you. And then Pastor Zach's response to that was, well, but Jesus, his take on that was not, don't do to others what you don't want them to do to you. It was, do to others what you want them to do to you.
Yeah.
And it was the act of serving other people and being kind for their sake that Jesus was really talking about when he was referring to the first and the second greatest commandments. And so here with the second greatest commandment, we have God, right after giving all these laws of how to treat people, how to treat the crops that you have, how to treat the things that God has given you, how to treat your relationship with God, he's then saying, and with your neighbors, actively do to them what you would want done to you, but don't do it for what you would gain. Do it for what they could gain.
Yeah, and that whole actively situation. Mm-hmm. This is not a passive, oh yeah, I'll do nice things if they want me to.
Yeah.
No, or if they come to me to do it. But it's more like go out and love.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same with all of these.
Yeah.
Like, don't defraud, don't steal, don't bloody bloody, leave things on your field so that people can come up.
Mm-hmm.
It's such an interesting chapter.
Yeah, and so the second half of this chapter is very different. So the first half was all about what you should do. And I think, like I said, with the focus on being holy like God. Then the second half of this chapter, after God says, you shall keep my statutes and my commandments, he then gives off a long list of things that shall be avoided at all costs. And for some of them, he even gives reasons. For example, in verse 29, it says, don't profane your daughter by making her a prostitute, lest the land fall into prostitution and the land become full of depravity. And then he flips it and says, you shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary. I am the Lord. So he's saying, don't do this because the land will probably end up depraved and terrible. Yeah, and so he gives a whole bunch of other things. Again, not eating any flesh with the blood in it.
Yeah.
Don't make any cuts on your body for the dead or tattoo yourselves.
I'd just like to interject there. The word tattoo shouldn't be in there. And if it is, let's remember that it says tattooed to the dead. So if you get a tattoo to the dead, that's not great. But if you get other tattoos for life, that's good, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that you have tattoos and you have a best friend tattoo with your best friend and
so other things like that. So I'd always argue that anyway. So maybe not take my statements as fact.
Yeah. Even so, I'm with you on this one. I think that... and there has been a lot of research done into this, especially in recent generations. Generations that are a lot more likely to want to justify their rebellious actions. I think in the discovery of what that actually meant in this verse, people realized that it is in fact referring to having tattoos or some kind of markings in reverence of the dead and other things like that. So I don't think that means in memory of the dead. So if there's somebody that you have loved dearly that has died, getting their name tattooed in your body is not the same thing that it's talking about here.
No.
I don't think. I think it was in order to celebrate death and in a way... well, it says later on, don't consult mediums and sorcerers wizards. And things. Wizards, exactly. It doesn't say anything about warlocks, so that's still on the table.
Or mages.
Or mages. Yeah. So there's plenty of spellcasters out there that you can consult. Just not Harry Potter.
Yeah, definitely not. That guy's the worst.
Not okay. Yeah, so what we're getting at here is that there are a lot of laws here, and a lot of them have been taken out of context and applied to certain stances that have harmed people throughout history, and especially throughout the last few hundred years.
And then some of them have not been taken at all. Like, yes. When an alien resides with you in your land, you shall not oppress the alien.
Yeah, well, didn't the... Oh, man, I wish that the government agents in E.T. had read that verse before
exactly.
they
Come
went
on.
About trying to capture him and everything. Poor Elliot. Lost his best friend.
Poor Elliot. Yeah. Pour one out for that guy.
Yeah. Okay, so an interesting end to this episode, hey, because it's... Yeah. We've gone through chapters 17 to 19. Don't be racist unless it's to vampires, then it's okay.
Oh, true.
I think that is the moral of the story here. Jeremy, do you have any closing thoughts or words of advice for the listeners at home?
How you can tell if someone is a vampire is... I've forgotten, actually. You put silver on them or something and they burn. Anyway, so
I think that's a werewolf.
Who we get to be racist to and who we shouldn't be racist to. But on the whole, don't be racist to anyone unless they don't like the sun. Is that what vampires are?
And they don't have a reflection. But also remember that albino people or albino people, depending where you're from, are not vampires. So don't be racist or prejudiced towards them. Also, it's not a race. So
yeah, they don't like the sun.
No, I met a really cool albino guy in New Zealand. He's a great bluesgrass musician.
I love bluesgrass musician.
I just said bluesgrass. Man, that's a fusion of genres.
As long as it's for less than 20 minutes.
All right. Okay, so we've given our advice. Keep a couple cloves of garlic on you. Yep. All good. Thanks, guys. Thanks for tuning in.
No, thank you, guys.
Next time, we're going to go through some more chapters of Leviticus.
we're going to continue
probably,
reading the Bible.
Yeah. we are going to skip some things because, as already stated by the Bible Project, this is kind of a mirror of itself in the way that things are framed. And we are just over the apex, so we are on our way back to all the things that we've already covered with priesthood and sacrifices. So we'll find what we can, and it shouldn't
just
be too long until we get
other
to numbers.
Episodes twice.
Yeah, I guess you could do that. Maybe I should just upload them again and brand them differently.
In backwards order.
Yeah. Oh, backmask them. That'd be fun. Okay,
yep.
That's
go.
Something for another time. Thanks, everyone. I'm Ryan.
I'm Jeremy.
We'll see you next time.